The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to break down big ideas from important research and make them really clear and useful for you.
Exactly. And today, we're tackling something huge.
Mm-hmm.
The whole psychology behind scarcity.
Yeah, it's a state that probably shapes our lives more than we even realize.
Mm-hmm. We're diving into the book Scarcity, Why Having Too Little Means So Much by Senthil Melanathan and Eldar Shafir.
Great book.
It really is. And our mission here is to explore their argument that having too little, you know, not enough money or time or even calories,
mm-hmm.
it isn't just inconvenient. It actually triggers a specific psychological mechanism.
Right. One that fundamentally changes how you think, how you make decisions.
Precisely.
And this is so important because, honestly, it turns a lot of common assumptions upside down, doesn't it?
It really does.
Like, if you've ever beaten yourself up about procrastinating or failing at a diet yet again, or if you've ever wondered why people struggling with poverty sometimes make choices that seem, well, not great for the long term.
Yeah.
This book argues it's not about weak character. It's not about willpower.
Yeah.
It's often the direct result of the mental state that scarcity itself creates. It's like a cognitive tax.
That's a perfect way to put it. A tax.
Yeah.
It helps explain why sometimes, maybe even for yourself, you feel like you're just constantly putting out fires, never getting ahead.
Exactly. So who came up with this? The authors are quite a team.
Oh, absolutely. You need some serious brain power from different fields for this. And they delivered. You got Senthil Melanathan. He's a big name in behavioral economics.
Right. MacArthur, genius grant winner, co-founded J-PAL. They do rigorous testing of anti-poverty programs. He brings that large-scale, data-driven economic view.
Mm-hmm. And then, crucially, you have Eldar Shafir. He's a cognitive psychologist from Princeton. An expert in how we judge things, how we make decisions, especially under pressure.
So one looks at the big picture, the systems, the data.
And the other looks at what's happening inside our heads, mm-hmm. like the mechanics of thinking when we're stressed or constrained.
That combination is key, isn't it? Because old school economics often just assumed everyone's rational, always making the best choice.
Right, the rational actor model. These guys basically say, hold on, let's look at actual human beings.
Yeah. And what happens when you put real humans under the stress of not having enough?
They offer this really compassionate but also scientifically solid perspective. It's not about blaming individuals. It's about understanding how the environment of scarcity shapes the choices people make.
Okay, so let's dig into the core idea. It sounds simple, but it has huge implications.
It really does. The central premise is basically this. Scarcity creates its own unique mindset, a universal psychology.
Universal meaning it applies whether you're short on cash, short on time, short on anything essential.
Exactly. And this mindset does two main things. First, it forces you to focus really intensely on the immediate problem, the urgent need.
Okay, makes sense. Survival mode kicks in.
Right. But here's the kicker. That intense focus actually undermines your ability to think about anything else. Especially long-term planning, saving, weighing future consequences.
So there's a name for that intense focus.
Yeah, they call it tunneling. Imagine looking through a tunnel, you see what's right in front of you, very clearly, but everything outside the tunnel fades away.
So if you've got a huge bill due tomorrow, your mind just locks onto that, how do I pay this now?
Precisely. All your mental energy goes there.
Yeah.
Which sometimes can actually be good in the short term.
How so?
Well, they call that the focus dividend. Tunneling makes you incredibly efficient at dealing with that one urgent thing. You prioritize like crazy because you have to.
Ah, okay. Like how a deadline can suddenly make you super productive on that specific task.
Exactly that. But it comes at a cost, a really significant, often hidden cost.
And that cost is?
It's what they call the bandwidth tax.
Yeah.
This is probably the single most important concept in the book.
Bandwidth, like mental processing power.
Exactly. Think of it as your cognitive capacity. Your ability to reason, to plan, focus, resist impulses, your executive control. It's your mental workspace.
Okay.
Scarcity, the constant juggling, the worry, the mental effort of managing with too little, it uses up that bandwidth. It imposes a tax on it.
So it literally makes it harder to think clear, reduces your mental horsepower.
Yes. Temporarily, it can make you, well, effectively less intelligent and less disciplined simply because your cognitive resources are being drained by the state of scarcity itself.
Wow. And you're saying this mechanism, this tunneling and bandwidth tax, it's the same whether it's a CEO swamped with emails or someone struggling to make rent.
That's the core argument. The psychological process is identical. Financial poverty, time poverty, calorie scarcity, and dieting. It triggers the same cognitive response.
That really shifts the conversation away from judging people's choices.
And towards understanding the cognitive state they're forced into. It's about science, not morality.
Okay, let's explore that focus dividend a bit more first, the upside of scarcity.
Right, the temporary boost. When things are tight, you don't waste resources. You
Wow.
become laser-focused, very productive on that immediate pressing issue. Deadlines work for a reason, right?
They force you to cut out the fluff.
But then comes tunneling. As soon as you enter that tunnel to solve the urgent problem, everything outside just disappears from view. Alternatives, future consequences, other important but less urgent things, gone.
Give me an example.
Okay, think about someone who's incredibly busy at work, totally swamped. They might be hitting all their urgent deadlines, getting those reports out. They're performing well inside the tunnel.
Right, looks productive.
But because their mental bandwidth is consumed by the immediate fires, they neglect things outside the tunnel. Important things, but not urgent right now.
Like scheduling a doctor's appointment or long-term career planning, maybe even just remembering family birthdays.
Exactly. Forgetting the dental checkup, not updating their resume, maybe missing important family time, putting off planning for retirement. Those seem like small neglects.
But they add up. They're basically creating future problems, future scarcity.
Precisely. Which leads us perfectly into the bandwidth tax and the really powerful evidence they gathered. This isn't just theory.
Right, this is where the research gets really compelling, the sugarcane farmers study.
Yes, in Tamil Nadu, India. This study is kind of legendary in behavioral science now.
Because they can measure the impact directly, right?
Exactly. They studied sugarcane farmers who get paid just once a year after the harvest. So they experience a predictable cycle of scarcity, then relative abundance.
Okay.
The researchers tested the same farmers twice. Once just before the harvest, when they were poor, stressed, really feeling the scarcity.
Right, maximum financial pressure.
And then again after the harvest, when they'd been paid and were financially comfortable.
Then what happened?
The results were stunning. When the farmers were tested post-harvest, when they felt secure, their scores on cognitive tests, measuring things like fluid intelligence and self-control, shot up. Significant.
Significantly?
The difference was equivalent to about 10 IQ points.
Wow, 10 points, just based on whether they were stressed about money or not.
Yes. It proved that the cognitive deficit wasn't a permanent trait. It was a temporary state induced by the condition of poverty, by scarcity. Lift the scarcity, and the bandwidth comes back.
That's incredible. It completely reframes how we should think about poverty, doesn't it?
Absolutely. If someone's making decisions that don't look great long term, maybe it's not that they can't plan. Maybe it's that in that moment, they literally don't have the spare mental capacity to think clearly beyond the immediate crisis.
And they show this wasn't just something happening in rural India.
Right. No, they replicated the core mechanism in the U.S. with a New Jersey mall shopper study.
What do they do there?
They talked to shoppers, some lower income, some higher income. They gave them cognitive tests. But here's the clever part. For half the participants in each group, before the tests, they asked them to think about a hypothetical financial problem.
Like what?
Like, imagine your car needs a $1,500 repair.
Yeah.
How would you handle that?
Ah, so just thinking about a potential financial stressor.
Exactly. For the higher income shoppers, thinking about that didn't really affect their cognitive test scores. But for the lower income shoppers,
It did.
yes, just contemplating that financial worry was enough to significantly lower their performance on the cognitive tests. The mental preoccupation itself acted as a bandwidth tax.
So that constant background hum of, can I afford this? How will I manage that? That's actively draining your ability to think.
That's the tax. It's a continuous quiet drain on mental resources.
Okay, so you've got tunneling, narrowing your focus, and the bandwidth tax, reducing your overall capacity. How do these work together?
Well, that combination leads directly to what they call the scarcity trap.
The trap sounds ominous.
It is. Because tunneling makes you focus only on the short-term fix, like taking out a high-interest payday loan to cover rent this week. You don't have the bandwidth to fully consider the long-term cost.
Or maybe buying cheap processed food because you don't have the time or mental energy right now to plan and cook healthier meals.
Exactly. These short-term fixes often make the long-term situation worse. The payday loan has crippling interest, making next month even harder. The unhealthy food affects your energy and health down the line.
So the very actions you take to cope with scarcity end up perpetuating it.
That's the trap.
Yeah.
It makes escaping scarcity incredibly difficult because the condition itself undermines the very cognitive tools, planning, self-control that you need to escape.
It's a vicious cycle. So if willpower alone isn't enough, how do we break out? What's the countermeasure?
This brings us to their crucial concept of slack.
Slack, like wiggle room, buffer.
Exactly. Extra capacity. Whether it's a bit of extra money in savings, some unscheduled time in your day, even surplus inventory in a business.
But isn't the modern mantra always about efficiency? Lean operations, eliminate waste, no slack.
That's precisely the mindset the authors challenge. They argue that relentless focus on efficiency, on running everything at 100% capacity, makes systems and people incredibly fragile.
Fragile how?
Because when you have zero slack, any unexpected shock, a sudden illness, a car breakdown, a delayed client payment, sends the whole system crashing down.
Right. It immediately throws you back into crisis mode, back into the scarcity tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Slack isn't a luxury, they argue. It's not waste. It's a fundamental necessity for resilience and long-term thinking.
It's the buffer that absorbs shocks.
Yes. And critically, it provides the mental space needed to step back, think strategically, and plan for the future. You can't do long-term planning when you're drowning in immediate problems.
So slack is like cognitive breathing room. It counteracts the bandwidth tax.
That's a great way to put it. It gives your brain the room it needs to function properly beyond just reacting to the immediate crisis.
Okay, let's pull back and summarize the really big takeaways here. What are the core messages we should remember?
Well, the first big theme is that scarcity is a universal psychology.
It's not just about them, the poor or the perpetually disorganized. It's about us.
Right. It requires a shift in empathy. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by deadlines and made a silly mistake or put off something important because you were just too stressed.
Yeah.
You've experienced a taste of the bandwidth tax from time scarcity. Recognizing that feeling in yourself helps you understand the immense cognitive pressure of, say, financial scarcity. It connects these experiences.
That's powerful. What's the second theme?
This one might be the most socially significant. Context over character.
Meaning?
Meaning the book is a powerful argument against blaming individuals for choices made under scarcity. It systematically shows that failure often stems directly from the cognitive state induced by the environment.
Not from some inherent flaw in the person's character or their willpower.
Exactly. If you want people to make better long-term decisions, the first step isn't lecturing them. It's alleviating the condition of scarcity that's taxing their bandwidth.
Change the context, not just judge the person.
Precisely.
And the third key theme?
That reinforces the scarcity trap. It hammers home just how hard it is to escape scarcity through sheer grit alone.
Because the scarcity itself robs you of the mental tools you need to get out.
Right. Your self-control is depleted. Your planning ability is shot. It highlights why simply telling people to try harder or pull themselves up by their bootstraps often misses the point entirely.
It suggests we need different kinds of solutions. Changes in systems and design, not just self-help.
Definitely.
The book has some really memorable lines that capture these ideas too, right?
Oh yeah, it's very quotable. Really crystallizes the concepts.
Like the one about how automatic it is. Scarcity captures our minds automatically.
Mm-hmm. That really drives home that you don't choose to obsess over what you lack. It just happens. It hijacks your attention whether you want it to or not.
It's involuntary.
Totally. And then there's the direct challenge to how we often talk about poverty. The poor, we are often told, make poor decisions. But this is not about an abiding characteristic of the poor. It is about the condition of poverty.
That's the core argument in a nutshell, isn't it? Reframing poverty as a cognitive burden, not a moral feeling.
Absolutely. And then there's the emphasis on what scarcity actually attacks.
Hmm.
Bandwidth measures not just cognitive capacity, but also executive control. The ability to manage impulses, to think ahead, to focus attention when and where it is needed.
So it hits the very things that make us effective, forward-thinking humans.
Right. And finally, the solution. Slack is not a luxury, but a necessity.
That really sticks. It's not about being lazy or inefficient. It's about building resilience, preventing small problems from becoming catastrophes.
Couldn't say it better.
Okay, this is fascinating theory, but how can people listening apply these ideas, like right now in their own lives?
Great question. The implications are actually very practical, especially for managing finances and time.
So if scarcity drains your self-control,
then stop relying solely on self-control. Design your life to conserve that precious bandwidth. The number one strategy, automate.
Automate what?
Anything you can. Savings contributions, bill payments, transfers between accounts. Use technology to handle the routine stuff. Every decision you don't have to make frees up mental energy.
So set it and forget it. Offload the cognitive load.
Exactly. And build intentional slack into your life. Financially, that means having an emergency fund, even a small one. The peace of mind it buys the reduction in bandwidth tax is often worth more than the interest it earns.
It stops small shocks from triggering the tunnel vision.
Right. And for time management, don't schedule every minute. Build buffers between meetings. Use checklists or templates for routine tasks, deciding what to wear, planning meals. Reduce the number of decisions you need to make.
Conserve your mental energy for the important stuff.
Precisely. And these ideas apply beyond personal life too, right? In organizations, policy.
Absolutely. For managers, this research suggests that pushing teams constantly to maximum capacity with no downtime might actually reduce creativity and long-term strategic thinking. You need some slack in projects.
Build in buffers, allow for unexpected hurdles without creating panic.
And for social policy, this is huge. It demands radical simplification.
Yeah. Think about complex application forms for aid programs. They require enormous bandwidth from the people who, according to this research, have the least bandwidth to spare.
So policies should be designed to reduce cognitive load, make things simple, automatic, opt out rather than opt in where possible.
The goal should be to free up people's mental resources so they can make better decisions, not add more hurdles when they're already overloaded.
It's a completely different approach.
It really is.
So as we wrap up, what was the most surprising thing for you from this deep dive?
For me, it was just the stark, measurable reality of the bandwidth tax, that 10-point IQ swing with the farmers, and the fact that just thinking about a hypothetical car repair could measurably impair cognitive function in the mall study.
Yeah.
It just shows how incredibly sensitive our cognitive capacity is to perceive scarcity. It's not abstract, it's physiological almost.
Yeah, that really hit me too. And what stands out for me is the profound call for empathy. It forces you to reconsider judgments about, well, anyone struggling with any kind of scarcity, time, money, whatever. Mm-hmm. It really pushes us to stop blaming individuals and start looking at the environments and systems we create. Are they taxing people's bandwidth unnecessarily? Can we design things, our own lives, our workplaces, our policies, to build in more slack, more cognitive breathing room?
It shifts the focus from fixing people to fixing the context.
Exactly. It's not just interesting research. It feels like a necessary shift in perspective for how we treat each other and design our world.
Well said. It's a powerful lens through which to see a lot of persistent problems.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.